All right, so we're up to Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Perek Bet, the second chapter. We're on Mishnah Vav, the sixth Mishnah. Now, this Mishnah is going to talk about the questions that they used to interrogate the witnesses who came to testify for the new month. All right, so they came. We talked about Bodkim Otam. They would question them. What kinds of questions would they ask? So that's the opening line of the Mishnah. Ketzad Bodkim Et Ha'edim. How would they question? What kinds of things would they ask the witnesses?
Rabbi, would a benefit of them lying is to come into the courtyard and have the meal and all that?
No.
Or they just want to verify it?
They just want to verify it. Sometimes people see one thing and they're not really clear on what they see. It's not so much that we think that they're...
Someone's
manipulating or lying on purpose. Yourself. They could just be mistaken.
Okay,
right? You know, I mean,
fine.
They could
they
just make a...
Want to make sure
yeah.
Information.
Yeah. Zug shebarishon, bodkim oto rishon. The group that enters the yard first, that's the first one who gets questioned. In other words, first come, first serve. Amongst the two witnesses, they interrogate them separately to make sure that they both saw similar things, they both didn't see different things. And so they bring the older one or the more respected one of the pair in first. They say to him, Emor, tell us, Ketzad ra'ita et ha'levana. How did it appear to you? How did you see it? What shape was it in? What position was it in? Lifneha hama or le'ahara hama? And this is an interesting question, right? They're talking about the U shape of the moon. In other words, when we're seeing the moon, right, now reappearing, you're seeing just a very small portion of it. You're seeing it in a crescent shape. So there's a what they call a pigimata shelevana, the part that is missing from the moon, right? The moon should be a whole circle. So there's part of it that's missing from it. You're only seeing a very tiny portion of it. So that part which is missing from it, what direction is it facing? Is it facing lifneha hama? Is it pointing in the direction towards the sun? Or le'ahara hama? Or is it turning in the direction opposite the sun?
Missing is the non-illuminated portion.
Correct. Now the non-illuminated portion. In other words, which direction is this U shape going? Is it facing? Right. So, if they say we saw it,
the U is the illuminated portion.
What?
The U is the illuminated.
Right. But what to what direction is it going this way or is it going that way? Is it which part is the empty space pointing towards? Right. So that he says lifnei hama. Or le'ahara hama, right? Is it pointing in that direction, in front of the sun, or behind the sun? Or is it pointing to a different direction? Litzfona or lidroma, is it pointing north or is it pointing south? Kama haya gavoa, how far up from the land is it? In other words, when you're seeing it, how tall is it? Is it at the top peak of the sky? Is it very low to the ground? Ule'ayin haya nota, and in which direction is it tilting? How wide is it? All of these were kinds of questions that they would ask to the witnesses to determine if in fact they saw what it is that they claimed that they saw. Because some of the answers to these questions, if they say, oh, we saw a very wide moon, they're going to tell you it's unlikely, right, at this point in the month that you're going to see something that was very wide. Or if they say we saw it pointing in this direction, so it sometimes based on calculations, it's impossible that the moon could have been pointing in that direction. They must have saw something else. They saw something that looked like a cloud. They saw something that looked like a plane, whatever it may be. Right? So sometimes their eyes could deceive them. Right? So says the Mishnah, Im Amar, if they said, Lifneha Hama, we saw the part of the moon pointing in the direction in front of the sun or towards the sun, Lo Amar Kilum. What does that mean, towards the sun? So basically, I'll bring you pictures hopefully tomorrow, I keep forgetting, but the moon is always going, that part of it is always going to be where the base of the moon is towards the ground, and the part that's not illuminated is sort of facing upwards, right? You're never going to find the moon like this, like facing in a arch
with
shape.
The crescent on the bottom.
Exactly. You're never going to find such a thing, right? That's what it means, pointing lifneha hama, right? It's pointing towards the sun. In other words, the sun comes up from the ground and the pigima, the missing part, is facing the sun. You're never going to find such a thing. You're going to find it this way. So if the witnesses tell you, oh yeah, we saw it in this way, tilted that way, you know that what they saw is not actually a sighting of the moon. It must have been something else that's deceiving them. Okay, so these are the kinds of questions, and very often based on calculations, based on the time of the month, the rabbis were able to know what it should have looked like, what they should have been able to see, and if their answers don't match up with what they should have been able to see, then they know that the witness's eyes deceived them and they didn't actually see the new moon, and so they have to dismiss their testimony and go with somebody else.
Boys.
Huh?
Do they still get a free meal?
Yes. That's what Victor was saying before, right? They still can benefit from the free meals, right? Because again, we don't want someone to be discouraged that, oh, they're not sure what they saw and they're not going to come and testify, right? This is not a case where they're doing it purposefully out of malice. It just could have been that they didn't see exactly what they thought they saw. Okay. So if that, in fact... That's what they would first question one of the two witnesses. Afterwards, they would bring in the second witness. They would ask him similar questions. If their testimonies line up, in other words, they saw the same thing and their answers match, so then edutan kayemet, their testimony will be upheld, and we can sanctify the month based on their words. Ushar kol hazugot. Now what happens now, let's say you had 40 different pairs of people who came, right? And now the first two guys come in, and their testimony is now accepted. Right? Now let's say the testimony is accepted, right? Now you got 39 other witnesses, all right, we came for nothing, let's go back home, right? So that's not a problem. Exactly. So ushar kol hazugot, all of the other witnesses, shu'alim otam rashid divarim, they would also bring them in and ask them a couple of questions, right? Make them feel like their testimony is of some kind of importance. What?
Let's say completely went against the first pair and they matched up separately at separate time.
At that point, it's probably we're gonna take their words with a grain of salt. Yeah, we're gonna try to take their words.
In other cases of edim, can't you rule out the second pair?
That's if they discredit the character of the witnesses or their position at the time. Like if they say, oh, those two guys can't do it, they were with me, or they didn't see it, or they went somewhere else that was impossible to see. But it's unlikely that that's gonna happen in the cases of Kiddush HaChodesh. You're less likely to have edim Zomemim in the case of Kiddush HaChodesh, because again, there's no motivation to lie. Like, what's the motivation over here? It's much less, right? So they would ask them questions to make them feel like their testimony was of value and that there was a reason for them for coming, so that people should not be deterred, right? Lo shayu tzerichim lahem, not because they really needed them, ela kedei shelo yitzu bepahei nefesh, that they shouldn't leave depressed, oh, it wasn't us, you know, we came for nothing, bishvil sheyehu regilim levo, so that the next time it comes, maybe it's not so apparent and not as many people come, we want the people who see it to come. We don't want them to look at the moon and say, you know what, everybody saw it, they're all probably going, I'm not going to waste my time now and go, and they're going to take someone else's testimony. No, we want as many people to come, because sometimes you get a very difficult month where it's not so clear, it's cloudy, people can't 100% see, and only getting, if you saw it and you don't go, it could potentially mean that they were unable to sanctify the month because they didn't have enough witnesses or people who saw. Okay, so that's a little bit about the questioning of the witnesses and a little bit more about the motivation to get the witnesses to come and to testify. Let's move to Mishnah Zayin, Mishnah 7. Now it gets into a little bit of the process of the from the judge's perspective, from the Bet Din's perspective. Rosh Bet Din Omer, the head of the Supreme Court, the head of the Bet Din, Omer, he announces, Mekudash, it is sanctified. V'chol ha'am onim aharav, all of the members of the nation who are there will answer back, Mekudash, Mekudash, it is sanctified, it is sanctified. In other words, there's a little ritual over here in which we want the word Mekudash to be said three times, but it has to actively be called out. The Pasuk says, Asher tikre'u otam b'mo'adam, you shall call them out during their time. So the rabbis learned from there that they actually have to announce it. There has to be a formal ceremony in which the Beit Din announces, Mekudash, it is sanctified, and the people respond, Mekudash, Mekudash, before they send it out. Right, it can't just be, yeah, we know, okay, very good, and then they move on. There has to be a formalization of that process. Now, the Mishnah says, Ben shenira'a bizmano, ben shelo nira'a bizmano, mekadishin oto. Whether the month was seen, the moon was seen in its time, whether it was not seen in its time, in both cases, mekadishin oto. What does this mean? So, just to back up for a second, we know that every Jewish month is either 29 days or 30 days, correct? Now, on the 29th day, that's when we're going to start to look out for witnesses seeing the new moon to come. So hopefully, if they see the new moon, we know that that month was a 29-day month. And the next day is going to be the first day of the following month. It's going to be a Chodesh Chaser, a lacking month. In other words, it's going to be a shortened month, only 29 days, not 30 days. That's if we get the witnesses on day 29. That's what we call nir'a bizmano. It was seen at its time. So the rabbis have to actively go out and say, okay, it is Rosh Chodesh. Today, this is day 29. Tomorrow is going to be day 1, not day 30. Now that makes sense that the rabbis had to actively sanctify the day because there was a potential for the next day being either day 30 of the previous month or day 1 of the next month. We weren't sure. So it makes sense that the rabbis have to say, okay, Mekudash, it's sanctified, tomorrow is going to be day 1, not day 30. The question is, what happens when no witnesses came on day 29? No witnesses came on day 29. So the next day is day 30, right? Now,
Wouldn't they come?
They didn't see the moon. The moon wasn't appeared, right? No witnesses showed up because the moon was not able to
so
be seen.
They know.
That month is going to be a 30-day month. Right. So now the question is, so it's a 30-day month. Everybody knows once it hasn't been sanctified on that day, on day 29, the next day is day 30. Automatically, what's going to be the day after day 30? It's going to be day 1 of the next month. There's no such thing as a 31-day month in the Jewish calendar. So the question became, do the rabbis have to actively perform this ceremony to sanctify the new month in a situation where it's automatic, in a situation where it's day 30? Everybody knows the next day it's day 1. Did they still need to do the mikudash? Did they still need to go through all of this hullabaloo to sanctify it, or it's already understood, it all happens automatically? So according to the first opinion in our Mishnah, he tells us the rabbis had to do this no matter what. Ben shenir abizmano, whether it was seen at its time on day 29 and they're sanctifying the next day as day 1. Ben shelonir abizmano, whether it wasn't seen at its time and the next day was day 30 and automatically it would become day 1, still the rabbis had to say, mekudash, they still had to take in witnesses, they still had to say, okay, you saw the new month, the next day is day 1, mekudash, it's sanctified, mekudash, they had to go through the whole process.
Rabbi, maybe this is obvious, but I'm a little confused. The 29th day of the month, right? So now the starts with the night, right? So that's the time when you're going to see this moon, right? And so now the 29th, could you see the new moon on the 29th? You're seeing it, or you're seeing it the following night right after the 29th, when the 30th begins, you're seeing the 29th, and you're coming to testify that morning, and that 30th
either,
day.
Either or, more likely that you're going to see it at night. And then you're going to come in the next morning.
So you're going to come in on the 30th morning.
Right.
And they're going to say the 30th morning isn't the 30th anymore.
It's the day first, right? Everybody would always be thinking it's either day 30 or day 1.
So the earliest you could come in to testify, where we take your testimony, could even be on the 29th, you're saying?
There is a potential that if they saw the new moon during the daytime that they could of the 29th, that they could come and sanctify the next day. There is such a situation.
Sanctify that day.
No, you can't, because there's no such thing as
not
less
sanctify
than
that day, but come and testify that day.
Correct.
Where the sanctification is automatically.
Yes, will happen in the next morning. Exactly. That is also another potential.
But it happened that night. They came the next morning.
Huh?
It happened.
Or but you could also see it during the day of the 29th and sanctify it. Come that day, and it's sanctified already. So that's the opinion of Tanakama, whether it's 29 or day 30. It was automatic. You still had to sanctify. Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok Omer. Rabbi Elazar, the son of Tzadok, disagreed. He said, "Im lo nir'a bizmano, if it wasn't seen on the 29th, right, to sanctify day 30 as day 1, en mekadeshin oto shekvar kitshu shamayim. It's already automatic. It's as if Hashem already sanctified it. There's no need to go through the whole ceremony because it's going to be automatic. So according to Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok, he's saying if they're going to sanctify it after day 29 to make the next day day 1 as opposed to day 30, that's necessary. That's okay because that's you're doing it here. But once it wasn't sanctified day 30 and you celebrate it, you went with day 30 as that, and you know the next day is day 1, there's no need to go ahead and make a whole formal ceremony. It's already sanctified from Shamayim. It's already sanctified from heaven. It's going to be automatic. And the halakha here follows Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok, not the Tanakama. Follows his opinion.
You do not need to say.
They did not need to make a formal sanctification on the day 30.
Let's say you were praying early that day. Let's say you prayed nuts that day. Like you didn't know if it was Rosh Chodesh or not. Because how fast did word travel back to the?
Correct.
They didn't how fast know. Can they light the fires?
Right, they didn't necessarily know. That's why they kept 2 days. You know, they did Safek Yom, and then, that's what they did. Yeah. Yeah. But then they have, now we have a set calendar, so we know it's a 2 days or 1 day. Usually they go alternating. What?
I'm still confused what? With what the cutoff is for when we can call the third
year. Tight windows.
What's the cutoff?
What's the cutoff? Meaning you're telling me the 29th day came and went. Now that night, right after that 29th goes, right, gets dark after the 29th. It's the beginning of the 30th. I see a new moon.
Right.
I come to Beit Din that next morning. They count the 30th as the first.
Right.
What's the cutoff before it's no longer? Meaning that 30th day, in the 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the 30th, I come, I see the moon. I run to the day. I saw the moon. Is that they now stole the
The Gemara in Maseret Beitzah tells us that they used to not be a cutoff. They used to accept the witnesses all day.
All day on the 30th.
All day.
Anytime the 30th day show up that day, correct. That 30th day is there.
Correct.
And the fact that, but we don't do the special sacrifices.
Right, like so that sometimes they would give those sacrifices out. There's a whole long Tosafot over there, Maseret Beitzah. What would they do with the sacrifices? What would they do with the extras? They gave them on condition. If it was, then it'll be Nidava. Right. If not, it'll be Tzibur. Yeah. They did all kinds of things. Anytime. Then on one Rosh Hashanah, there was a problem. The people didn't come early enough, and the Leviim, usually they came very early in the day. That's usually what it was. Usually it was understood. But one time they delayed and they didn't come, and the Leviim didn't know what to sing, what song to sing in the afternoon. Was it Rosh Chodesh? What? They didn't know, and so they changed it that they only accepted the witnesses till the time of Korban Mincha, and then after that they would say no, it's pushed, it can't be. So they did make a certain cutoff. But in the beginning it was all day they would have come.
Okay.
Yeah. Now again, all of this is still being done with calculations in mind. In other words,
understood.
It wasn't they also knew when it was likely to have Zayt. So the witnesses, I don't want to say were a formality. They were necessary. No, they couldn't do it without the witnesses.
It'd be a foggy day, you could have those days.
We right now. But no. So if that happened and there were no witnesses, then all the calculations right. in the world are not going to help you. But you're going to see in the next Mishnah, Rabban Gamliel and many of the Hachamim, they made calculations so they knew if witnesses came and testified. And based on their calculations, it was impossible for the moon to have possibly appeared. They knew he was lying. They mm-hmm. knew that the guy wasn't seeing what he was seeing. Right? He wasn't telling the truth. So they used calculations in connection with the witnesses, with the eyewitness testimony, to make an accurate assumption
of the moon themselves.
Sometimes they could. We'll see. The Mishnah will talk about what happens if the Bidin themselves see it. Yeah. We're going to see a little bit about that.
I mean, how many, you can only have so many 29s in a row, right? The calculations.
Right, for the most part, yeah. They still alternated and you needed a certain amount of days. Out. Right, exactly. And the Gemara speaks over here about tricks that sometimes the Rabban Gamliel and the rabbis would do if witnesses came and they didn't want to make it Rosh Chodesh, because then the calendar didn't fall out. Like, for example, let's say it was the month of Tishrei, and they didn't want Rosh Chodesh to fall on a specific day, because then Kippur would fall out on the day after Shabbat. Kippur would fall out on a Sunday. They didn't want Kippur to fall out on a Sunday. So they would make like little tricks and ways of delaying the witnesses, of confusing them, whatever it is, to get it to the So we'll see a little bit more about that. We have two more Mishnayot in this chapter. And then we'll finish it up hopefully tomorrow.